What's up, hockey fans? This is episode 95 of the Clappercast. I am Burke, and as always, joined by my co-host, Sean. Sean, the bandwagon wasn't enough to save the team that is the jersey you're wearing today. How's it going, man?
You know, I'm still getting over the bandwagon, falling off the bandwagon here, but you know, we're going to have a nice send-off here for the 2020-2021 season, so let's get down to business and talk about the NHL's version of the Harlem Globetrotters, also known as the Stanley Cup Finals.
Let's get down to business. That song, I never want to hear it ever again in my life. For anyone who watched CBC, you would have heard that about 800 times a game in the finals, and I cannot express enough how much I hate it.
I absolutely had to try and force one of those in there just to annoy you.
And then in game five, the first stoppage of play,
in the
they
arena.
Play that fucking song. I couldn't believe it.
I hated it. Not only was Sportsnet CBC in on it, they had the arena in on it too.
rigged. But yeah, I mean, I guess to get back into the business here, get back to business. Tampa Bay Lightning defeated the underdog Montreal Canadiens in five games, 4-1. I don't think a lot of people were super surprised that Tampa ended up winning, but in my mind, I would have liked to see Montreal put up a little bit more of a fight. What are your kind of thoughts right off the bat about how the series went?
Honestly, right from 5 minutes into game one, I mean, it started a bit slow. It started kind of in Montreal's favor for the first few minutes of game one, but very, very quickly, Tampa showed that they had a massive advantage in almost every area. Montreal lost their game. The system, the style of play that got them through Toronto, that got them through Vegas, they completely lost their plot early in game one. And not even Carey Price, he didn't have a great series either. He was pretty average at best for the first three games. And he couldn't even bail them out very much. The team wasn't bailing him out. It was just a disaster for those first few games.
Yeah, it just was, like you said, they kind of left the game plan a little bit. And, you know, Tampa's a team where you can't do that. You got to stick to the game plan. You got to, you know, stay to your strong suit, because Tampa can just make you pay on any mistake. And that was very apparent in all the games, that Montreal was just making too many mistakes. And, you know, there's costly turnovers where they pull the goalie and they just instantly turn the puck over. And when they were down and they get a goal against, and, you know, like that one backbreaker goal in, what was it, game three, when they Tampa Bay scored with like 0.3 seconds left in the second period. It's like, you just can't let that stuff happen in the finals and win. Like, you just...
Yeah, you mentioned the turnover thing. It was something like 2/3 of Tampa Bay's goals came within 10 seconds of a Montreal turnover. And it's, you know, it's not just like little random plays Montreal was outworked and turned it over. It's stupid little plays. You know, bad passes, poor attempts at clearing. I remember it was either in game four or five. There was a play along the boards 2/3 of the way out of the zone, and I think it was Eric Staal shoveled it along the ice right to the defender for Tampa, and they scored right after. You know, just little plays like that, you have to get that puck out. Like, you just elevate it a bit, put a little bit more force on it. And, you know, that was kind of a theme the whole series, just turn over and break the other way, and Tampa scores within 10 seconds of it.
Not to pick on any one player, but Eric Staal was really bad in the finals. He was so bad at clearing the zone, like you just mentioned, like a turnover at the blue line. In the final game in game five, he didn't get the puck out, and it caused the Tampa to take a lead. He was just so frustrating to watch. And that line was just so good against Vegas too. Staal, Armia, Perry line, and they got so much momentum for the team in that series and every other series too. And then they just really, like, I think it looked like Perry was getting some chances and everything, but Staal just looked,
oh yeah,
he was just looked like a, yeah, he was having a tough series.
you know, the biggest thing is, like, those first few rounds, you would hear those names on the ice constantly. Like, they didn't get the most ice time, but you would hear their names constantly. They were always doing something. But most of that finals, you wouldn't hear their names. You didn't hear a whole lot of the what's going on. You heard Corey Perry occasionally when he'd get the puck close to the net and, you know, pass or shoot or whatever. But, I know, Armia and Staal were not very visible that last round.
Corey Perry did get that absolute snipe goal where he went over Vasilevsky's shoulder, though. That was pretty awesome, I gotta say. I mean, the turnovers were just, you know. And then just the blatant disregard for Tampa cherry-picking or, you know, in front of the net. Like, they just, the defensive coverage just wasn't as on point as it was in, you know, every other series. And, I mean, you know, pun slightly intended there. you know, they just weren't covering Braden Point at times or Kucherov in front of the net. And it's,
do you,
like,
remember,
get on that guy.
One play. Yeah, there was one play where I think it was a penalty kill. Montreal's trying to clear the zone, but of course they turn it over at the blue line or something. There's two defenders still in the zone, and neither of them were within 25 feet of Braden Point, who's wide open in front of the net.
Yeah, it was just,
I think this was early in Game 5. You know, it's stuff like that where, you know, like you said, the coverage. You can't leave those guys open. You can't give them that space.
Yeah, they just went off the rails, like, on Game 1, yeah. And they just weren't able to get back into it. And, you know, thankfully they didn't get swept, and they were able to win one game at home in front of some fans and, you know, kind of get back a little bit of their respect or whatever you want to call it. But they weren't playing their game that got them to that point, and it was very, very apparent. And they couldn't
afford.
Tampa
turned their game around on them.
Yeah, they couldn't afford to do that against Tampa. Like, Tampa was just so much better than them.
Like, Tampa took the strategy that Montreal had, like, shutting down the zone entries, the breakouts, the offense. Montreal was thriving on doing that and just shutting down the opposition, and Tampa turned it around right on them. You watched Montreal's offense those first few games. They couldn't get anything going. You know, partly due to Montreal, they wouldn't stop. They wouldn't just make a play. They would skate in the zone, they'd have the puck, and the puck carrier would just glide for an extra half a second, and it gives the defenders and the goalie enough time to get into position and block the play. You know, they're doing that constantly. Tampa was shutting down Montreal's offense, and you saw it especially through the last part of Game 5. Montreal couldn't even get into the offensive zone. They give up the puck at the blue line. There's no support for the puck carrier. They'd try and dump it in, and they wouldn't even make it to the puck by the time it's turned over already, so the stuff that Montreal was doing the other three rounds being used against them, and they couldn't solve their own plan.
Yeah, and they also couldn't solve Vasilevsky, who is just an absolute monster. Like, what is it now? Like, five series ending with a shutout victory.
Yeah.
Like, it's just insane.
Not to mention the performance, the shutout after the loss. To add on to that streak as well.
The fact that he didn't win the Vezina is just number one bullshit, Sean.
Oh, yeah, number one bullshit. Number one bullshit.
as a direct quote from Nikita Kucherov, of course. I think moments before he absolutely shit on Montreal fans, which was an absolutely classy move. But I'm kind of torn on that because I have to give him massive props for being shirtless and drunk in an interview with the press.
That is... As inappropriate as the interview was, it's an absolute classic.
Yeah, so it's like, you can't fault him too much for, like, being, like, you know, talking some shit about, like, Montreal fans. Because he said something along the lines of, like, their Stanley Cup finals was last round, and they were celebrating like they had just won the Stanley Cup. Are you kidding me?
When they won one game.
And I get, like, I get what he's trying to say, but it's like, okay, like, win with some class here, but also, like, you're drunk, you're shirtless. Like, this isn't a serious fucking moment.
I'm more interested in knowing who exactly along the Tampa Bay Lightning's public relations crew decided that sending a shirtless drunk Kucherov to do their interview, like, their main interview after the game, was a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, who okayed this?
Maybe they were hoping he would hurt himself somehow. while shirtless, and he could go back on the IR so that next year, or, you know, going into the offseason, they can sign a bunch of guys and, you know.
Apparently. Slips getting off the stage, toss him on LTIR again.
Yeah. I mean, regardless of the cap situation, they didn't have Alex Killorn. They just completely outmatched Montreal, and Vasilevsky was a huge part of that. Kucherov, Point, Hedman, you know, points leaders in the NHL, Stamkos as well. So they were just gross. Like, they were just so much better than Montreal at offense and you know, protecting the puck and forechecking, and their goaltending was just, you know, a cut above. And, you know, Vasilevsky is just absolutely insane. Like,
yeah,
I think he's won every single home game, I think, in the last two Stanley Cup playoffs for Tampa, which is just insane.
And like, I think Bettman said too, like, he's the first goalie in history to play the first goalie since Ken Dryden to play every single game in back-to-back cup wins or something like that.
And Dryden was an absolute legend.
Like,
also,
yeah,
shout out to Ken Dryden. I'm slightly related to him somehow. So, you know, that's my claim to fame. But yeah, that, I mean, he's just insane. You know, a .937 save percentage in playoffs. His goals against was 1.9. He was second in playoffs to Jack Campbell, but obviously that Jack Campbell lost. So, you know,
and also only played 7 games.
Yeah. And so, like, that stat where it's like, you know, basically every series they've won has been a shutout win for them. And then just, like, his stats after a loss are, yeah, like, absolutely insane. Like, he's just so dialed in.
You know, you hear talk about, you know, the intangible quality of clutch. And, you know, Andrei Vasilevsky at this current moment is probably the most clutch player in the entire league. You know, goalie and skater. In terms of what he is doing in the biggest games.
Yeah. It's, you know, like, I think they were talking about it during some of the games, but it's like, how confident can you be when that guy's in the net? Like, you're just like, yeah, no matter what, like, we're going to be in any game because he's just going to, you know, be there for us. He's going to just shut it down. And if we lose this game, he's going to be dialed in for the next game.
The next, yeah, exactly.
Like, we have a shot at coming back. And, you know, Price is obviously one of the best goalies of his generation, but, you know, he wasn't able to compete against that guy. Fazzy was just totally next level.
Yeah.
All playoffs. And, yeah, you're totally right. Just absolutely clutch. Just, like, in off the charts, Richter scale clutch levels.
Exactly.
And, you know, he's signed for quite a few more years. So, you know, looks like he's not slowing down at any time soon. So that's pretty great. Yeah. So, I mean, I guess, the next thing I kind of wanted to ask you is just, are there any positive takeaways for the Montreal Canadiens? Because, you know, it's been so long since the Canadian team has even been in the finals, like, not even just the Canadiens. It's been over, you know, it's been 10 years exactly since, the Canucks were in it in 2011. And, you know, the Habs haven't had a nice run like that in quite a while. So, you know, bit of a disappointing end to it. But, you know, nobody expected them to go that far. So what are some of the positives that you think that the, you know, Habs fans or the team can take away from that?
It's just the hope that a run like this brings, the energy, the life that it gives back to the city, to the fans, to the team, to the players, to everyone involved. You know, I want to send out some, you know, empty platitudes towards what it means for the next years, but quite frankly, we're going back to the old division alignment next season. So Montreal is going to be stuck in a division with Tampa, Florida, Toronto, and Carolina again. So there's a very good chance they didn't even make the playoffs behind those four teams. And I find it hard to see, you know, Montreal's roster being able to compete, you know, in a full season with those teams. But the fact that they got here, they had an exciting run They, you know, gave Canadian hockey fans something to cheer for again for a little bit. They gave, you know, Habs fans like a taste of something that hasn't been had in almost 20 years. You know, it's just that energy is going to be great moving forward, getting fans back in the arena next season. And, that's probably the positive to take out of that.
Yeah, I definitely agree. You know, there's a lot of positives to take away. Just, you know, the excitement and confidence in the team and, you know, a new coach being able to take them to on a run like that. And, you know, winning without the head coach on the bench when Dominic Ducharme was, you know, out on COVID protocol, that's probably a huge motivation. You know, one thing I kind of wanted to mention too about the Habs is that there are some potentially spicy or interesting storylines going into next season. Is that, you know, they've got kind of a lot of guys whose contracts are expiring, so they could look quite different. You know, just taking a look here on Cap Friendly, Corey Perry, he's 36. His contract's expired.
He wants to play in Montreal next season.
And we spoke about this a little bit, but there was a story that came out that when Corey Perry was going through waivers, that his agent reached out to teams that they thought might claim him, and he asked, out of respect for Corey, you know, at this stage in his career, he wants to stay in Montreal. Please don't put a claim in, basically. And obviously, he stayed in Montreal. And so, you know, when he went on waivers, I thought maybe the Ducks, maybe the Stars, maybe some of those teams would want to claim him. And I was kind of surprised that he didn't go anywhere. And, you know, he is a playoff performer. His redemption arc isn't quite complete until he wins that cup again. And so, you know, do they take a shot at him again, sign him again? Because they also have basically that whole line, Armia, Perry, and Stahl, are all expired, all UFAs. How many of those guys do you bring back? I would hazard Armia and Perry. I don't think they bring back Stahl. I don't think that really quite worked, especially in the playoffs.
I have to agree there.
The giveaways that he had, it just didn't seem like he fit into the system. You know, he's not a very fast player. Not Perry isn't fast either. I wouldn't say any of those guys are really that speedy.
The thing is, Perry's a net front presence. He's not really a dynamic, more offensive creator. He's more of a net front guy.
And he does everything right. Like, regardless of what you think of Perry as his, you know, his play style or his, you know, his cheap shots or whatever, he gets the puck out, plays a simple game. He knows what he's good at. He's a reliable player. You know, he can be counted on. And so I think that they bring him back. I think Armia comes back. Thomas Tatar, he didn't play, like, at all in playoffs.
I don't think he's going to be back. I don't think the relationship between Tatar and the team is conducive to bringing him back.
Yeah, and then Arturi Lekkonen is another guy who's RFA. Him and Kotkaniemi. Kotkaniemi is an interesting one because he actually got benched. But scratched for the last two games of the finals. Does that perhaps, you know, is that an issue with him? Does he take that the right way? Does he take that the wrong way? I don't know.
I don't think it's representative of how the team feels about him as a player. I think it was just, we need to make some changes for the roster for this game. And Montreal kind of has that type of, the type of roster and the type of depth chart where they can just kind of swap in a bunch of guys here and there. And it's not like it's not like a you're worse than this player. It's we just need a different fit for this game.
Yeah.
And they just need to make a couple of changes. I don't think him getting scratched for the last couple of games is really representative of his future with the team. I feel like it's more of just we just got to change something up here, and you're kind of the expendable spot.
And then perhaps the most spicy is Philip Deneau as a UFA. And what do you do with Jonathan Drouin? Is he coming back? We don't know the story there. So I think those ones are going to be probably the most interesting for me. Is just what is Deneau worth? I think that they would have to try and keep him, based off of just his performance shutting down some absolutely unreal players in the playoffs. And then what's going to happen with Drouin? what, like, where is he? What's, is he coming back?
Is he going to be in a state to return to the team for next season?
Mm-hmm. Because there hasn't been, like, anything come out, basically, about what's going on with him.
There's actually been that's actually kind of nice to see, is that his privacy, his you know, personal time, his privacy and all that's being respected quite well, and it's not being constantly questioned or reported on.
Mm-hmm. And then on the defensive end, John Merrill, Erik Gustafsson are both UFAs. I think neither of them come back.
They might, if they can't find another option, maybe Merrill they bring back as an eighth guy. But I don't, you know, there's no way Gustafsson comes back. I don't think he's a particularly useful player on that team, especially considering they have Weber and Petrie who do what Gustafsson can, but better.
And they're actually defensemen too.
Yeah.
Yeah, Gustafsson was just trash, like in the finals specifically. Like I don't know how they didn't go to Romanov earlier. That guy just, like, Romanov makes some mistakes, sure. But Gustafsson was like, here, Tampa player, take the puck in front of the net with an empty net. That's fine. Like, it's just... And then they were playing him and another D-man on the power play. I was just like, what is going on here? So anyway, I think, yeah, both those guys are gone. And then, you know, they're obviously going to lose somebody to the expansion draft too. So, unless they do some crazy shit. But... you know, they've got a lot of players that are on the way out, potentially. You know, what's the team going to look like? Are they going to be the same? Are they going to have that same, style of play?
Yeah, are they going to be able to maintain the culture if there's a significant amount of turnover? Is a huge question there.
Yeah, and... just one last thing about the Habs before kind of move on to Tampa, but seeing Shea Weber crying broke me. That was rough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just that emotion in the moment of, you know, this guy's 35 years old, he's kind of in his last couple seasons, that's like, you know, could always be your last shot at getting that, and you know, was that his first Cup Finals appearance?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's just a big moment. I mean, same situation with, like, Carey Price in there, too. You know, they're both hitting their mid-30s, kind of winding down. That's their first shot, and, you know, will they get another one?
Yeah, it was tough to see. So, I don't know if they're going to be as good next year. Like you said, they're going to be back in the Atlantic, so that's going to be a tall order. But, I mean, you know, people got behind them in Canada, so hopefully, you know, they can, you know, take some positives and stay a competitive team next year.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we know they can beat the best in the league, but it's just going to be, you know, can they keep that up? Can they refine how they did that going into next season, especially if there's a whole bunch of turnover on the team?
Yeah.
Because it's going to be a tough division to get anywhere in next year.
Mm-hmm. And moving over to Tampa, you know, congratulations to them winning the, you know, back-to-back Stanley Cup final.
I'm very disappointed that Nikita Kucherov's mental fortitude did not win the Conn Smythe.
It was close. I think it was close. It was between him and Vasilevsky's crazy eyes, and Vasilevsky's crazy eyes at the end of the day took it. Yeah, I mean, I've harped on the salary cap situation before, but, you know, I did take pleasure in the fact that John Cooper said, you know, we're likely not having the same group next season. It's like, yeah, you're fucking right. You're not having it. You're not doing this again.
See, the thing is, though, they still have Patrick Maroon for one more season, so technically they're going to win the Cup again next
yeah,
season.
I guess so. Unless he gets traded.
At this
traded.
Point, it's just a foregone conclusion.
Yeah.
You know what? Maybe Seattle takes Patrick Maroon in the expansion
draft,
that'd
be
so
a
they can
smart
win the Cup
move.
First year.
Yeah.
Can he be the first guy to win with three different teams in 4 years?
That'd be insane. Absolutely insane. And it's like, you know, he's like a obviously an NHLer and a great hockey player, but like, was he really a significant part of any of those runs?
He plays a role, but I mean,
like 7 points, not like 7 points in the 2019 playoffs, 6 points in 2020, 4 points in 2021.
You know, I feel like, I don't know, he's probably one of the more locker room guys.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, he doesn't need to be what he was in Edmonton playing beside McDavid. He just needs to be there to be a presence, to be a physical, you know, pestering presence.
Yeah, for sure.
But, yeah, I mean, special shout-out to Patrick Maroon. He's the first guy since the early 80s Islanders teams to win 3 straight cups, and the first one since a couple of guys in the early 60s to win 3 cups in a row with 2 different teams.
So the Lightning on their social media had these videos where it was, like, mean tweets. And there's one where it was, like, Patrick Maroon scores a hat trick and calls it – or scores 3 goals and calls it a fat trick. I think the real fat trick is winning 3 cups back-to-back-to-back.
I feel like that's not even mean for Patrick Maroon. He'd probably be like, yeah,
no,
he'd be on board with it.
I think, like, because
he straight up called himself chubby but effective at one point, I think.
Because in that video where he was like, call it a fat trick, he was like, yeah, just give me a donut after or whatever, I'll eat it. So it was like, all right, yeah, back to back to back. So I'm looking forward to his antics during, you know, the parades and all that sort of shit. But yeah, like I said, congrats to the Tampa Bay Lightning. It's kind of cool to see particularly Stamkos win again, because he actually was a huge part of this playoff run, and he had like a quiet, tied for third points in playoffs. Almost half Kucherov, but still, like, you know, he was actually playing not just like 2 minutes in their playoff run. And so it was kind of cool for, you know, to see him actually be involved this year. And, you know, his career obviously has had a lot of, you know, lows in Tampa, losing and not quite getting over the edge, and injuries
that
are just
career
injuries, or not almost
yeah.
not career ending, but like season ending injuries and things
career,
like that.
Career threatening. There were some questions. I mean, you know, the broken leg, I think he had blood clot issues for a bit too. And, you know, he'd come back, he'd look good, and then he'd get hurt again. And it's just, you never know, is like, when's it going to be the last injury?
Yeah.
So to see him kind of come back, he have a relatively solid season, you know, be a big part of the team's playoff run to win it again. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, I really hope that their team gets blown up in the off season. And that they can't field or ice a team that's this good again, because that just sucks. Like, as a non-fan of them, I really hope that, you know, they can't have their cake and eat it too again, that they need to lose players. They've got Barkley Goodrow, Blake Coleman as UFAs, you know, David Savard as a UFA, Luke Shen, their 7th, 8th D-man. And then they've got Ross Colton, who was just kind of came out of nowhere as an RFA. And so I hope that, you know, they have to make some tough choices and they lose a good player in the expansion draft. So
it sounds like they're going to want to push for Killorn to get taken, whether that be a trade of some other assets over to get Killorn's $4.45 million taken. And then I have to imagine they're going to try and push Tyler Johnson to be traded or bought out or claimed on waivers or whatever, and then free up that $5
million. Wasn't Tyler Johnson from Washington too? So I don't think Seattle's going to make a decision on who's born in Washington State, but, you know,
Tyler Johnson is from Spokane, yeah.
So that might make sense for them to pick, but I don't know if they'll want him at $5 million for 2 more seasons or 3 more seasons.
Well, there are salary cap conditions in the expansion draft. And especially for a team in their first year, you know, to get them to the cap floor at least.
Right. Yeah.
Comfortably, because who knows, you know, who knows who they're going to take or what they can do. So they can kind of eat up a bunch of cap space somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, I think if they were to pick someone like Tampa Bay is probably going to have to expose a really good player. And like Cirelli might be a guy that they don't protect. And, you know, that might be a guy that is worth picking. yeah, Cirelli might be a good player. I mean, he did have a slightly not as great regular season this season as last year. Not as defensively awesome as he was the season prior. But, you know, potentially a really good pick for them. Or maybe a guy like Eric Chernak. You know, somebody like that might be a good pick as well. So... I don't know. Regardless, I think they're going to have a really tough time of keeping their team together, and I'm here for it, is all I can say.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of an exodus onto other teams, so you'll just get some talented players, some experienced players hitting up other teams and just kind of spreading the talent around.
Yeah, and they've done such a great job of trading and stuff, so I'm sure they'll do something to, you know, keep some of the guys and... you know, players might take discounts to play there because their team is so gross. So,
yeah. Well, question for you though. You know, this roster over the last 2 years, it's, you know, pretty much the same over the last two seasons. But is this one of the best rosters that we've seen over the last 20, 30 years? Where does it kind of fall in that? Do you think?
Yeah, I think. I don't know. I think it's tough because, like, I think their goaltending is obviously the best, if not, like, top three or whatever. And then that Kucherov is like, the first player since, like, Lemieux or Gretzky or something to have, like, back-to-back, like, 30-point playoff seasons. So it's, like, that's pretty disgusting. But also there haven't been a lot of teams that have gone so far in the playoffs back to back, except for Pittsburgh. So
yeah, and then you had like Detroit and Colorado in the late 90s, early 2000s.
Yeah, so you know, I think their team, like Kucherov, Stamkos, Point, you know, Point's like goal streak where he was like, you know, almost got he was one game short of like tying the all-time record of goal streak in playoffs, and you know, Victor Hedman is amazing. So I think they're probably close, but I don't know if I'd go so far as to say that they're like one of the best in the last like two or three decades, but they're up there for sure. But I yeah, like they've got like a lot of top end, but I don't know
how the depth stacks
up. Like just to be clear, I'm not putting the Capitals ahead of them. Like, that team, again, Kolpe was good. He made the save, but he wasn't as good as Vasilevsky. The Capitals' defense was nowhere close. you know, Brooks Orpik was obviously better than Hedman, but aside from that, yeah, I don't know. It's just it's an interesting question. I'm not prepared to answer who I think the best is, but I think some of those Red Wings teams or something would probably be the number one, or maybe like the probably an Avalanche or a Red Wings team would probably be number one, would be my guess.
I have to agree with you on that.
But maybe in the last 10?
Last 10, absolutely. Probably. Because, I mean, the only one, even that Pittsburgh team that went back-to-back, you know, the roster itself wasn't the strongest. They were just a good team overall.
Yeah.
You know, this one has like more, you know, top end firepower. It's got the goaltending, it's got the defense over that team as well. And you know, at that point you'd basically be competing with the Blackhawks, because the Kings weren't a star power team either. They were just a solid system that was really good and strong, and they had Jonathan Quick at his prime then. So you're basically competing with some of those Blackhawks teams.
Yeah. And it's like the, you know, the old adage is basically like, you know, you can ride a hot goalie in playoffs. And, like, that's what so many of these teams have done, right, is they just get a, like, Matt Murray, Jonathan Quick, Crawford. I mean, the Hawks are a good team, too. But,
Antti-Niemi.
Yeah, hot goalie. Yeah, Antti-Niemi. I remember I have a friend who was like, why would they get rid of Niemi after they just won the cup? It's like, the guy sucked. That's why. They won the cup despite him. Not because of him. He was okay, but yeah. And then, yeah, they won.
He was good enough that the team Crawford. In front of him could score.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, they're good, but I would say, yeah, in the last 10 years, they're probably the best team.
Yeah.
And part of that might be because they're, you know, $18 million over the cap. maybe
in
not.
In the words of Nikita
Kucherov,
number one bullshit.
Yeah. Like, now that they've actually won, I feel like it's less of a big deal. It was just, like, before they won, it was the prospect of them winning. I was like, oh, my God, I don't want them to win because of that. But now that it's over, it's like, whatever. Like,
yeah.
As long as it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, I feel like that's going to be on the NHL's agenda. I've said it already a couple times, but it's got to be on their agenda this offseason to tie up that loophole, figure out a way to negate how the LTIR, to change how the LTIR is used, or change how the salary cap, if it's applied in the playoffs.
Yeah, or like, you know, a minimum games to appear in playoffs or something like that. Like, you know, a minimum, because there's like a minimum to appear on the cup, right?
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, there should be a minimum to play in playoffs, so you can't just, but then it's like, okay, well then what about like players that you've drafted that haven't played regular season games, right?
Yeah, like Caulfield.
Yeah.
Didn't really get much regular season time. Or someone who's genuinely injured but can make it back in the playoffs. Or trade deadline acquisition. Something like that, right?
That would make it interesting, though, because like, if you know you're going to make playoffs and you need to have like a minimum game threshold, it's like, do you burn a year of someone's ELC just so they could potentially be a black ace for you in playoffs? That would be spicy. That would be interesting. See, you know, what teams would do with that. But yeah. Okay, well, you know, any other takeaways for Tampa or Montreal from the finals at all? I thought it was pretty interesting that it was like the number one power play versus like the number one penalty kill. We haven't seen that kind of like battle of like the special teams, I don't think, recently, about you know, teams that were so good, like historically good, playing each other. Because I think Montreal's penalty kill was absurd. You know, they had killed like 40 in a row or whatever.
Yeah, they finished at 91.8 for the playoffs. Tampa's power play 32.4 for the playoffs. Those are just outrageous numbers.
Yeah, imagine if they were the same team.
Oh, that would, you know, that's like that combined power play penalty kill percentage when you get it over 120. Like,
yeah, because it's normally like if they both add up to 100, you're doing okay.
Yeah, that's kind of like a guideline, is like, can you get them to 100 combined?
Yeah. Okay, well, let me ask you this then, Sean. Was there any player that stood out to you in a positive light on either team that, you know, aside from like the top stars in the finals? Any player that you thought had a really good series? That's not maybe like, you know, Vasilevsky or Kucherov or Point. I think Eric Chernek had a good series. I think he really kind of solidified himself as a solid defenseman. And then also on Tampa Bay, Matthew Joseph did a really good job of filling in for Killorn in the lineup.
Yeah, Joseph, he was a really good energy guy for them, and I think he contributed a pretty big goal in there as well.
Yeah, and, you know, last year in the playoffs, he didn't play at all. And, you know, that must have been weird, like in the parade and things. Like, you're like, yeah, I helped during the regular season. I played, you know, some of the games. And then he didn't play at all in playoffs. So it must have been huge for him to, you know, play in the finals and to contribute.
To make an impact.
And I thought he had a good series.
One name I want to throw in there is Andre Palat. He kind of gets overshadowed, because he ends up playing with Kucherov, Point, Stamkos, whoever, and he doesn't really get noticed as much. But he is such a great support player in those roles. He had 4 points in the Cup Finals, and you could argue anyone could go in there and do that type of stuff with the players he's playing with, but he solidifies those lines in a way that just makes them that much better, and gives some of the other players the freedom to play their games a little bit more.
Yeah, he's a solid player for sure. And then a guy that's on Montreal that I think we kind of sung his praises last year and throughout playoffs, but Ben Chiarot is a great defenseman. Solid, plays hard, plays like the quote unquote right way, plays a physical game, doesn't seem to cross the line. Takes some penalties
That's a huge one.
But
is that he's physical, but he doesn't cross the line, and he plays hard minutes.
Yeah, and he's not particularly like the most offensive guy in any respect, but he was trying to do his part. He was trying to like rush the puck up a few times, and he made some like pretty nice moves and was really close to scoring a few times. And he's got a bomb too from the point. He got, I think, one goal, one assist in the finals, but he plays a lot of minutes. Like he was playing like, 24, 25 minutes a night. He's just a dependable defenseman, and he doesn't make as quite as much as the other guys on Montreal, like the top four. He's a solid defenseman. Like
he's one that I'm confused why Winnipeg didn't keep him.
Yeah,
because he's kind of exactly what that team needs is the Ben Chiarot type defender.
Yes. Yeah.
But he's come into Montreal, and he's really, in the last couple of seasons, has made a huge, huge impact for that team, and just giving a counter style to Weber and Petrie, and just being a solidifying presence for those guys on the back end.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he was probably one of like the, I mean, Montreal didn't have a great finals, but I think out of the players, he had a good finals. He was noticeable in a good way when he was on the ice, and as a defenseman playing against Tampa Bay, that could be hard to do. And so like his passes were nice. He wasn't like firing the puck at nobody, skating the puck when he needed to, taking a shot, playing the body. So like he had a really good series. But aside from Chiarot, I kind of struggle to pick anybody really on the Habs. Like Suzuki had moments.
Suzuki was the only other name I would mention, just because he was trying. Like he had his moments, but it was hard when he's not getting any support.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of left on his own to fend for himself against top level defenders, and he can't really do a whole lot from there. But he really made a name for himself through these playoffs, so he's gonna be kind of a future star to watch here moving into the next couple seasons.
Yeah, I'd say him and Anderson, like they both have their moments, but like I don't know, Anderson, I felt like he needed to do a bit more. He had like multi goal game, but it's tough. Like I don't know, his speed and his physicality, I felt like he needed to bring a bit more. So there's a lot of players that you can talk about on Montreal that were disappointing, I think, but it wasn't any one, particularly one player. It's just kind of the team was outmatched, and, they got beat at the end of the day. So, anything else about, the finals that you wanted to, mention here, Sean?
No, that covers everything for me.
Cool. The only thing that I wanted to mention was the fact that the expansion draft is coming up, and I'm really looking forward to it. It's coming up super fast. And the fact that Seattle plays their first game against the Canucks. It's awesome.
On September 26th, they're going to be playing their preseason games in Spokane, Everett, and Kent, Washington. The Seattle Home Arena, the Climate Pledge Arena, will be ready for the regular season, but they're still working on it, so they're going to play their preseason games across the state instead.
It's kind of cool. Do a bit of a tour of the state.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just that's actually a really good idea, even if the arena was ready, just to go get the team.
Get some
fans. Presence around the state, around the area, yeah.
Yeah, extend the reach of the Kraken.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it's,
they're going to have all your favorite players.
As someone who lives in British Columbia, it would probably be cheaper to go to Seattle, buy tickets in U.S. dollars to the Kraken than it would be to watch a game in Vancouver.
Maybe not the first little bit of the season, but absolutely at some point, probably.
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be a economic experiment for us to keep an eye on, is just how much those tickets cost for their season opener versus how much they cost for Vancouver's. Because shit be expensive, yo.
That wraps things up for this time here on Clappercast. Make sure you rate and review this episode and toss a follow or subscribe our way. For more content, you can follow us on Facebook or Instagram at Clappercast Media or on Twitter at Clappercast. Thank you all for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more hockey talk.